Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
We've had 35 resurrections of the dead. The closer they are to freshly dead, the easier they are to resurrect.
So I see this giant angel, and I asked him his name. It's a financial company, and I realized this angel is here for our finances.
And that's a true literal story, by the way.
These people are charlatans, and it's about time we draw a line in the sand and stop fraternizing with the wolves.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Always ready or darkened mind. This is Wretched Radio. No doubt the number one verse to support Christian apologetics would be your 1 Peter 3:15. Always be ready to give a reason for the hope that lies within you. And we use that verse regularly to say that's why when people fire missiles at Christianity, we need to be Star Wars. We need to be able to deflect those. We need to be, well, actually like China, who apparently now can send a missile at a low altitude all the way around the globe. We need to be able to stop those bad boys. I wonder, however, if there might be a verse that is more instructive for us when it comes to Christian apologetics. Because I think that verse in context is be prepared to share the gospel more in the bullseye than apologetics, which are ancillary. It is a part sometimes of sharing the gospel, answering questions to people who make accusations, their stumbling blocks. But I wonder if Romans 1 might help us more. When we read about the descent of sin and the fall of humanity, the further a society gets away from God, it used to be a mystery to me. Romans 1, who are these people? Who is Paul describing in Romans chapter 1? These people whose minds become darkened and they fall into increasing degrees of wickedness, and then ultimately they end up just being flat out foolish. It seems to me that might be more of a verse that would guide our sharing of the gospel and specifically our defense of the faith. We need to be prepared apologetically, but it really needs to sit at the feet of sharing the gospel. And I think both Romans 1 and 1 Peter 3 would agree. It is the gospel, the preaching of the cross of Christ, that is the power of God unto salvation, not our apologetics. A darkened mind can't get it. They can't reason with you. They need regeneration. They need some light in their darkened mind. Then they can start to grasp stuff. Having said that, we do need to be prepared to respond to people's questions. But please remember, when it comes to apologetics and using defenses of the faith, I think we would all do well to make sure we're not dealing with dogs. Specifically, when Jesus said, don't cast your pearls before swine. Don't go messing with people who are like wild dogs who will just rip you up. Don't do that. And when somebody does the, what about this? I think that's pretty close to what you're dealing with. They don't really want an answer. They want to mock, or they want to hear themselves say what they use to justify not believing in the most obvious thing in the universe, which is God exists. Think of it like this. Now, Jimmy, you're going to have to use your imagination. So will I on this one. But okay. If everybody else has ever been into a, let's say, a tiff with the missus,
yeah.
Some sort of disagreement. And just tangentially, I was reading an article about what our wives need the most. Obviously, they need Jesus the most, talking about from their husband. Number one thing was love. Not just saying it, but showing it. Not just saying, hey, I'm pretty certain I told you that when we were engaged. If I change my mind, I'll let you know. But until then, you don't need that information repeated again. But this article was a very helpful reminder to what you and I should be remembering when we get into a tiff. And I think it applies apologetically. then this street goes two ways. Let's just say, Jimmy, you and the missus, well, it's a little tough. I'm going to play the role of your wife.
I hope you're ready for this one.
I don't know that I'm ready for this one. I'm going to approach you one of two ways. Here's the first way.
On eggshells.
So, knucklehead, going to keep making sure that I don't find out the information about how the car was running? How's that going to go down?
Yeah.
Round two.
Yeah.
Ding. This is role play number two. I'm Mrs. Hicks.
Darling, I hate it when we fight. And I know how busy you are and that it maybe slipped your mind that the car doesn't start because the battery is dead. But could we maybe talk about this a little bit?
How's that going to go?
And then I woke up because that's the only way that happens.
Well, that was bordering on either a nightmare or just downright creepy. But the point being, if somebody approaches you because they want to work it out, you can engage and have a productive conversation when it's nothing but pew, 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 and doesn't go anywhere. And the same thing is true when you are witnessing to somebody and they are pew, 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 pew. I'm not sure it's worth your time, but if somebody asks genuine questions, we need to be prepared to have genuine answers. Courtesy of Dr. Jason Lyle.
Somebody says, why are you creationists against science?
Uh-huh.
That's a logical fallacy. That's called the fallacy of the complex question. The complex question is when you phrase a question such that it assumes an unwarranted conclusion. Okay, so why are you, wait a minute, we're not against science. I do have a PhD in science. I'm not against it. I wasted a lot of years if I'm against it. So we're not against science. See, it's called a complex question because it should be divided into two. First of all, are you creationists against science? And then, if so, why? Should be divided. Ah. And in a courtroom, they're not allowed to ask. Lawyers are not supposed to, anyway, ask complex questions. And they could object and say that's a complex question. You divide it.
Wow.
Because it's the old bat. Do you still beat your wife? Or have you stopped beating your wife? How do you answer that? Either way, it assumes something that is unwarranted.
Yeah, and you kind of give some sort of credence to their accusation. Dr. Jason Lyle, who's written a book on logical fallacies, helping us to identify them. So when somebody has a ha ha ha, you can say ho 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 ho.
So how about this one? Either you believe the Bible or you accept the scientific method. I believe the Bible and I accept the scientific method. Although only one of those two is infallible. And it ain't the scientific method. It's a bifurcation fallacy. Bifurcation fallacy is when you falsely assume that there are only two options that are mutually exclusive. I could say, actually, my friend, I do believe that the scientific method has merit because it's based on biblical principles like uniformity in nature, that God upholds things in a consistent way for our benefit, that God made our minds rational and our senses able to probe the universe. That's why we can do science, because of the Christian worldview.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bifurcation fallacy to say it must be A or B. Always think that through. If somebody says you're either this or that, think through. Is there a third option? Because a lot of times there is. And so I always say D, none of the above.
Yeah, they happen to have a fallacy that undergirds their supposition, which is what a supposition is, that is false. You can't win in those types of conversations. Identifying that's a fallacy is really helpful.
How about this one? The Bible teaches that God causes lightning and rain. I mentioned this one earlier, but we now understand that these things are due to natural forces. We understand what causes rain. When the temperature drops below the dew point, the air can't hold the moisture and it rains. Of course, that's not God. Actually, that's a bifurcation fallacy. I realize that lightning and rain are due to natural forces, but that's not an alternative to God's power. That is God's power. Right. You see, natural forces are simply the name we give to the way that God normally upholds his creation. God's the one that's ultimately causing the atoms to move the way they do. And so God does cause lightning and rain, but he uses what we would call natural forces to do it. God ordains not only the ends, but also the means. That's not a problem in the Christian worldview. That's a feature.
Mm-hmm.
And I would point out then to the person who challenged me with this, I'd say, in your worldview, how can you have laws of nature? That doesn't even make sense. If nature's just random chance, why would it obey laws? Right? Laws of nature are law-like because there's a mind behind them. God controls the universe in a consistent way, and he does that for our benefit. And it's logical because God's logical. Keep that in mind. Natural laws are not a replacement for God's power. They're an example of God's power. Mm-hmm. They're the way he normally acts. Does God have to do it that way? No, he's God. He can do what he wants. If God wants to suspend the laws of physics for a while and do something extraordinary, he can do that. That's not a problem. He can turn water into wine. It's not a problem. But normally the way he does things is in a way that is consistent for our benefit. And he's promised us certain cycles in nature, like the day and night cycle. In Genesis 8:22, God promises that the seasons and the day and night cycle will continue as long as the earth remains. So I know that the sun will rise tomorrow. I can guarantee you that, okay? Because I have a promise from God. And that's what allows me to do science.
Wow! Does that ever feel like, I think, the third or fourth chapter of a book I'm writing right now? The constancy of nature. When you drop something, you do not fear it's going to fly and stick to the ceiling. Why? Because the laws of nature are constant. That means there must be a constant behind them, and that constant is God. And as we seek to share the good news, this God sent his son, we do need to be prepared to give a reason for the hope that lies within us. Next on Wretched Radio. If and you don't mind me saying so, I resonate with this sentiment from Dan Steiner of Preborn Ministries.
To be able to look across America and see this Holocaust of abortion and know that people like you are doing something about it. It's one thing to say that we're against abortion, but it's really another to take action.
Do you resonate with that sentiment? Then please consider supporting Preborn Ministries. Ultrasounds save lives. For $28, you will be providing an ultrasound that 80% of the time causes the mother to choose life. That's really doing something. May I ask, how many babies' lives could you save for $28 each? Preborn Ministries also preaches the gospel to the mommies and the daddies, and you can learn more at preborn.org/wretched, preborn.org/wretched.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. As always, you know we appreciate your continued support, and we need that support now more than ever. Our newest evangelistic booklet, Solving the God Puzzle, is here, and we need your help to get it into as many hands as possible. Just head over to wretched.org/puzzle to request as many copies as you promised to give away, and we'll send them to you at no cost other than the shipping. This effort is only made possible with the support of our gospel partners. So while you're visiting wretched.org, head on over to the donate page and consider becoming a monthly gospel partner. Your ongoing support and partnership helps us spread the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ across the globe. And just like here with Solving the God Puzzle, you're enabling Wretched to reach the lost, equip the saints, and strengthen and serve the local church. So check out all of the details on supporting Wretched right now at wretched.org/donate. That's wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
If you like to support ministries that focus on sharing the gospel, you will love Tomorrow Clubs in Eastern Europe. Weekly kids meeting clubs where the kids get loved on and they hear the gospel, like Armic from the Republic of Georgia.
2 years ago, I was invited to a camp organized by the Tomorrow Clubs. Tomorrow Clubs helped me see Jesus was my God and Savior. If it hadn't been for the Tomorrow Clubs, I would never have learned about Jesus.
$30 per month will be sufficient for a Tomorrow Club to operate, gather the kids, and preach the gospel to them in places like Georgia and Ukraine and Romania and Russia. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club? $30 a month, 30 disciples. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Know your church fathers. Tertullian is known as Asia's first Christian theologian. He came from Assyria and studied under Justin Martyr before returning to prepare a path for the gospel into Western Asia. He wrote A Harmony of the Four Gospels. It was the primary gospel text in Syria throughout the 3rd and 4th centuries.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Every time an atheist goes to bed and falls asleep peacefully, they're admitting God exists. This is Wretched Radio. No, they aren't saying I believe in God, but their actions demonstrate they recognize they don't have to worry about the sun rising the next day. I don't think there's many people, if any at all, that are ever concerned about that. Why? Day after day, season after season, the sun comes flying up and we know, it is well with the world. Why does that happen? You see, if you don't have an authority who puts up speeding signs, you can go as fast as you want to. But when an authority determines this is how fast you will go and no further, puts up a sign and has the power to enforce it, then you better stick within the laws. And the same concept applies to looking at nature. There are laws that govern the process. And there is an authority who stands behind them and is able to enforce them. Without that, then we wouldn't have a consistent sunrise. It would go the sun, or we would go flinging off someplace. But we don't. Why? Not only the constancy of the rising and setting of the sun, how's about the exact right amount of gravitational pull distance required for us to just spin the way we do without going woo like a yo-yo without a string? Because God controls, rules nature by the word of his power. And he is never diminished for doing so. He doesn't run out and need a recharge. God is not like a Prius. I think is that the battery operated car, Prius? I think that's
pretty much,
one.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Tesla? That's the one right there.
Yeah.
You know, those people, I don't know if you know this, Jimmy, they're very special.
What?
They get the better parking places and they get to juice up their cars.
Yeah, yeah.
While we circle the lot, because all we want to do is just poison the mother. God doesn't run out of gas. Consider the sun, the fury of the sun. How does that continue to burn? Natural processes. There must be a power behind it, and that power is God. And that is a bite of information that we would do well to share with those who make accusations, specifically scientific accusations, against Christianity. Dr. Jason Lyle, who has written a book on logical fallacies, presenting a lecture at a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, of all places. Jason Lyle, speaking at the Missouri Synod, not to have a synapse or anything, this morning was listening to, it was from Concordia Publishing, was the best version I could find. There weren't a lot of great ones. What God ordains is always good. What God ordains is always good. Every single verse, I think we've read it before here on Wretched, it just reminds us that we can rest no matter what happens. If your day is filled with dread, God ordains it and it's always good. And then you and I, just all we need to do is just recline into that. Just rest into that. You got a speeding ticket because you just weren't paying attention. God ordained that. It's for your good. You're either going to trust that and rest in that, or you're going to kick against it, not believe him, and be miserable. It's a pretty simple option. The trick, of course, is just resting in that. Fascinating thing happened to me this last weekend. I sent out a 4-minute snippet of a new TV series that we're working on called Transformed. It is a show about biblical counseling, showing people actually getting counsel from a biblical counselor, Dr. Greg Gifford at the Masters University. He's the fellow who leads the counseling. Dale Johnson from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors is the chalk talker in the series. And you will see people who are struggling with issues that either you or somebody you know has. There was a young man in this episode of the 4-minute clip that I sent out to 15 friends. Hey, take a look at this. Tell me what you think about this. Are we on the right track with this? And this particular fellow was transparent, so grateful for that. He said, the intrusive thoughts, the OCD, it controls my life, and I don't know that I'll ever escape it. Well, guess how many friends I heard back from out of the 15 who said, yeah, I got that too. Or a close relative struggles with those intrusive thoughts too. Four people that were willing to go, I know exactly what that guy is dealing with. In fact, one of them was that exact same issue that this man had, which was a fear that he's going to run somebody over with his car. And it controls him. I heard from somebody who said, yeah, I know what that's like. That is a reminder. Folks are struggling with a lot. OCD, anxiety, depression, anger issues, a lustful mind that can never seem to be satisfied, all spiritual battles that everybody is having. What does that have to do with reclining into the sovereignty of God? I think with specifically with OCD, it's extremely helpful. You just can't walk away from a situation without doing it over and over and over and over again, repetitively, because you fear you've done it wrong, even though your senses go, yep, did it. How's about stopping? Lord, you've given me my senses. I can translate what's going on. I believe that I have done what I'm supposed to do in this situation, and now I am going to rest in you. I'm going to trust you for the outcome, whatever it happens to be. Because what God ordains is always good. Always. Dr. Jason Lyle helping us to witness effectively by dealing with some of those rascally, hey, what about this?
Somebody says, we know evolution is a fact because bacteria have evolved resistance to antibiotics. This is an equivocation fallacy, the fallacy of shifting the meaning of the word. Mm-hmm. The word that shift meaning is the word evolve or evolution, which can just mean change in a generic sense. Well, we all agree things change. There's no doubt about that. The animals today are not exactly the same as they were at creation, right? But that doesn't mean they've evolved in the sense of from a common ancestor. They've remained the same kinds. Dogs have always been dogs and will always be dogs. And so the fact that you see things change doesn't, in a generic sense, does not prove a specific type of change, the Darwinian type. So this is, again, equivocation fallacy, because you're using the same word in two different senses. Mm-hmm. I know evolution's true, by which they mean Darwinian evolution, because we see evolution in the sense of dogs becoming different breeds of dogs. Two different things. Don't fall for that.
It's an equivocation fallacy, but there are more that we can be on the alert for.
Here's one. Creationists do not believe that animals change at all. That's an example of a straw man fallacy. Right? Mm-hmm. That's where you misrepresent the position of your opponent and then show how easy it is to knock down that silly position. Because it's easy to show that animals change. They're not identical to their ancestors. We know that. You can get different species. You can get speciation. But that's not what creationists teach. That's a misrepresentation of what creationists teach. We do believe animals change within kinds. We don't think that lizards become birds. But we do agree with speciation and different breeds and different breeds of dogs. See, a straw man fallacy, you misrepresent your opponent, you show how easy it is to refute that ridiculous position. But if he were up against an actual creationist and what we actually taught, he might find that more difficult to refute.
Seems like we should mention Answers in Genesis at this moment.
Somebody says, you're just a Christian because you were raised in a Christian home.
Uh-huh.
If you were raised by Muslims, you'd probably be Muslim. Now, that's interesting because there's some truth to that. And a lot of Christians find that difficult to refute. But if you know something about logic, you realize it is a fallacy. That's called a circumstantial ad hominem fallacy. A circumstantial ad hominem is where you dodge the argument by pointing out the person's circumstances or motivations. Huh. So somebody who said, well, you're just for higher gasoline prices because you work at a gas station. You'll get paid more. That may be true, but that doesn't mean his argument's false. He might have made a really good argument for higher gas price. I don't know what it would be, but hypothetically.
Somebody
just
must
because
be
you're
making
motivated
it.
To argue for a position doesn't mean your position is wrong. Just because you've been blessed by parents who taught you the truth doesn't mean it's not the truth, does it?
No siree, Bob. It doesn't affect the object of the faith. The understanding of the one who believes it, the zip code in which they were born, entirely irrelevant to the argument. Now, it could be that they are a follower of it because they were born into the system and they just continue to swim there, but that has nothing to do with the credibility of the object of one's faith. It's yet another logical fallacy, which you and I would do well to identify. And might I suggest there's only one way that we can likely do that, because we're not as snappy as Jason Lyle. When we're in a witness encounter and listen, we need to really, really listen and think. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I'm Jimmy Hicks. Well, earlier in the month, the government of Manitoba, Canada voted down an anti-free speech bill that would have barred pro-life activists from protesting in front of abortion clinics. Bill 207 was proposed by Canada's New Democratic Party. There's a shocker. And not only was it seeking to ban pro-life demonstrations, it was also looking to make them criminal in nature. But in the end, it was shot down by a 30-20 vote and deemed to be anti-free speech, because that's exactly what it is. Well, over the weekend, a Haitian gang kidnapped 17 North American missionaries, including 5 children. The missionaries were taken while they were visiting an orphanage near the capital. The gang responsible for the kidnapping has been known to make requests for large sums of money, upwards of $1 million in some cases. The country has continued to destabilize since the assassination of its president in July of this year. Earlier this month in northern India, Hindu extremists beat and looted worshippers, leaving one man unconscious, another with ruptured eardrums, and others with internal injuries. More than 200 Hindu nationalists intruded into the House of Prayer church building as service was just about to begin earlier in the month. They began to beat members of the congregation, leaving many injured. Police charged the attackers, though no arrests have yet been made. Please, as we remind you almost daily here at Wretched, pray for all of our brothers and sisters abroad. Well, senators in Texas continue passing more common sense legislation. Last Friday, a bill was approved that mandates transgender public school athletes to play on the team that fits their biological birth, not the gender they feel they are that particular day. The ACLU is against the bill because apparently it violates the rights of transgender students. What rights? The right to erase female sports by allowing boys to play dress up and compete against girls? Apparently, the ACLU and others thinks that it is a right. Such a sad time to be alive in the history of this country. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Books of the Bible. Amos was a shepherd called to prophesy during a time of prosperity in Israel and Judah. But this prosperity was accompanied by idolatry, extravagance, and corruption. When you consider the society you live in, Amos declares that God judges societies by his standard of righteousness. He hates all corruption and injustice. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Blessed synapses. This is Wretched Radio. Sometimes the stuff that fires through our brain we wish would not appear. We wish those thoughts that sometimes intrude would just stay away. And yet there are other times when we can have thoughts that are, good. And I actually had me one of those thoughts. This is a hymn that for some reason comes into my brain when I'm taking a look at the landscape of society. And right now, oofta, if you had to play Nostradamus and say, how is this all going to play out as human minds become increasingly darkened, therefore the policies reflect nothing but bad agenda? People are not of interest. human flourishing is not a concern. Agenda! That's what we need. Gas prices being, what was the one that I think it's $4 in California, where they're putting on such restrictive trucking regulations. I could be wrong about this, but it's like if your semi is older than 3 years, you can't drive it. Okay, that's just putting people right out of business. And incidentally, I thought it was a little bit fascinating that the ports in California, they've got ships just hanging out in the water because they don't have workers to unload them, supposedly. They're not having that problem in Florida. And my understanding is not in New York either. These are people who make decisions that are agenda-driven with little or no concern at all about the impact that it actually has on real people. And as I look at the decisions that are being made, the foundations that have absolutely crumbled, the darkening of the mind, I'm not a prophet, but it can look a little bit bleak. And you think about your kids, and you think about your grandkids, and what are they going to grow up in? Like an Eastern European socialist disaster? And this hymn popped into my brain. It's 6 verses. And this is an encouragement to us to not freak out, Le Sheik. We are to rest in God and what he is doing. And you and I have that opportunity to do so a lot when we watch our news feed. It's going haywire out there. Rest. What God ordains is always good. Always, always, always. Everything. Stock market goes crash. You lose your retirement. Whoa. That's serious business. What God ordains is always good. And I'm either going to be in an absolute state of panic, or I'm going to rest. I'm going to recline in his goodness, and I'm going to trust him in the moment and all of the moments that require trust, which is really every moment, but in particular, some that are extremely urgent. It's a decision. I will either be feelings-led or faith-led. And this might also serve as a reminder, we really need to be persuaded that robust hymnology, Christian music, yeah, it's kind of important. I did hear a song the other day. I have to confess, it was so excellent. It's the one that's antiphonal, where the one person sings and then the whole congregation is supposed to sing it. Who's worthy? He is worthy. Who is worthy to open the scroll? And it asks questions, and it's antiphonally answered, and it's robust in theology, and it makes you go, yes, Jesus wins. He's got the power to open the scroll. That's the type of song that has biblical information that will actually encourage you. I blush to admit this, but I was listening to it in my car. I almost didn't quite. Almost put my hands up. That's right. That's right. This stoic from Minnesota. Even just, yes, yes. Why? Because of the music was moving. It was well done. It was Shane and Shane singing, Is He Worthy? It's just really excellent. And it just encouraged me and gave me joy. Was watching a special on, I think it was Martin Luther. Martin Luther and his home life and what he was like and the efforts that some people were making to try to, well, they would say, we're not justifying it, but maybe context will help. Nah, those anti-Semitic remarks that he made, no, yeah, no, no. I mean, I could understand something along the lines of, Lord, convert them, save them, let your spirit move liberally throughout that community and be glorified in their salvation. That's a good prayer. That their Talmud should be burned, their home should be, they should be cast out. Even so, Martin Luther, talking about hymnology, because he was a hymn writer, wrote his famous hymn, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, when he was gone and his acolytes were assembling to figure things out, and they were feeling distraught, concerned about the future, they'd stop and sing, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, a bulwark, never failing. Music will do that for you. If it's not just emotionally manipulative, but it's grounded in truth. This is the type of stuff that we should be singing that does our hearts good. What God ordains is always good. His will is just and holy. As he directs my life for me, I follow meek and lowly. My God indeed in every need knows well how he will shield me. To him then I will yield me. Yield, rest, recline, step into, whatever verb you want to pick. We got to do it. It will help you through when you are scared. It'll help you through when you are blue, when you are mourning. It's not some sort of pill that you take. It's not like Tylenol. You take it, and 20 minutes later, hey, my headache's gone. But thinking on these things gives us correct perspective and allows us to deal with them, respond to them, and heal from them a little bit faster. You lose a loved one. Can you say what God ordains is always good? Always. Always. Always good. His will is just and holy. We're either going to rest in that or kick against the goads. Verse 2 of what God ordains is always good. He never will deceive me. He leads me in his righteous way, and never will he leave me. I take content what he has sent. His hand that sends me sadness will turn my tears to gladness. There's revelation for you. No more tears, no more stuff. One day, don't you worry, these tears are going to be turned into gladness. Verse 3. What God ordains is always good. His loving thought attends me. Imagine. No poison can be in the cup that my physician sends me. My God is true. Each morning new, I trust his grace unending, my life to him commending. That thought needs to saturate our thinking. And if that doesn't do it for you, verse 4. What God ordains is always good. He is my friend and father. Was just watching a snippet from Milton Vincent. It's a sermon we've played here before. It describes in Romans chapter 5 that God saves us unto something. He doesn't just save us from the wrath that is to come. He does that, but he does it for a purpose. And that is to bring us into a relationship, as the great adjective Milton Vincent chose, a rich, luxurious, intimate relationship with God, that we are made his friend. And because of Jesus, we can actually approach him, be in his presence. What God ordains is always good. He is my friend and father. He suffers not to do me harm, though many storms may gather. Now I may know both joy and woe. Someday I shall see clearly that he has loved me dearly. Verse 5. What God ordains is always good, though I, the cup, am drinking, which savors now of bitterness. I take it without shrinking. For after grief, God gives relief, my heart and comfort filling, and all my sorrow stilling. Not encouraged yet? What God ordains is always good. The truth remains unshaken. Though sorrow, need, or death be mine, I shall not be forsaken. I fear no harm, for with his arm he shall embrace and shield me. So to my God, I yield thee. Might I challenge you to do that today with whatever storm is confronting you, to remember what God ordains is always good. Rest, yield, recline. This is Wretched Radio.
You know, there are a ton of things people partner in. Some have business partners. Some have workout partners. Everybody needs accountability partners. Then there are partners in crime, which I don't recommend. You've got marriage partners, which I do recommend. And of course, we can't forget the Wretched Gospel Partner. Our gospel partners make what we're able to do here at Wretched possible. Without you guys, there is no Wretched. You have faithfully and consistently helped Wretched reach millions of people all over the world with the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. And for that, we humbly thank you. And if you haven't done so, would you please prayerfully consider becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner with Wretched? You can know that your generous gifts will be faithfully stewarded away. So would you, number one, please pray for us? And number two, would you also pray about how you could support Wretched as a monthly gospel partner? Get more details on how you can do just that right now at wretched.org/donate. That's wretched.org/donate.
Let's play a word association game. I will give you several words and several short phrases, and you need to figure out what they all have in common. Are you ready? Go. Telehealth. A huge PPO network. $3 billion of medical bills. Double the satisfaction rate. Saving an average of $500 per month. What do all of those words and phrases have in common? The answer is MediShare, affordable biblical health sharing. Your family will likely save on average $500 per month. And according to their surveys and polls, you're going to be twice as happy with MediShare than you were with your traditional health insurance. Would you like to know what your family will be saving every month? Please call 1-844-34-BIBLE, 844-34-BIBLE for MediShare.
It's October already. That means the leaves will start changing soon. It also means the annual Wretched Fall Booklet Sale is taking place. Now through October 22nd, all of our evangelistic booklets are 25% off. That's Don't Stub Your Toe, Are You a Rotten Fish, The Man Who Split Time, and 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide. All 25% off. Of course, solving the God puzzle is always no charge. It's a perfect time for you to get stocked up for Halloween. And no, we're not encouraging you to celebrate a dark satanic day. We're actually encouraging you to celebrate Reformation Day. The world is always going to continue with their worldly traditions like Halloween, but we can reclaim that day from Satan. And when the children come to your door looking for candy, give them truth instead. Hand out one of our evangelistic booklets, which are 25% off right now at wretched.org. That's wretched.org. And together, we can reform Halloween this Reformation Day.
Attributes of God. Psalm 115, verse 3 says that God does all that he pleases. God is sovereign over his whole creation. He has the right and the power to govern all things according to his will. Nothing occurs in your life that God, in his sovereignty, has not allowed. He is working all things for his glory and the good of those who love him. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Do you feel the world is broken? This is Wretched Radio. All you need to do is watch your newsfeed and read your Bible, and you will learn, lickety-split, the world is broken. The world is in great need of supernatural intervention. You can read that in Romans chapter 5, or you can go to the internet and read stories like, fewer Americans think marriage is needed to create strong families. That is a broken worldview. 2021 survey. 45% of Americans agree that society is better off when more people are married. Even our former governments used to get it. Even bad governments understand marriage is good. It provides stability. We can't manage everybody individually. There needs to be some inner house management. Now, we're going to try to manage that, say, in China, North Korea. But they recognize marriage is good because it is. Why? Because it's really one of God's metaphysical spiritual laws. You get married, you stayed married, things tend to go better for you. Don't the polls bear that out enough? When asked if they think marriage is old-fashioned and out of date, 19% said agree. So it's not just about marriage, it's antipathy. Do you feel the world is broken? Nearly 4 in 10 American adults live without spouse or partner as single population grows. Got to remember, single is good, but only if it allows the person to dedicate more time to the service of the local church and the body of Christ. We don't want to say marriage is better because single is better in some regards, and so is marriage. The point is, many people are missing the blessings that do come with marriage. An increase from 29% reported in 1990. That's going to be a lot of people dying alone. That is sad. They won't know the joy of having progeny standing at their bedside, knowing that they have imparted godly wisdom to them. Do you feel the world is broken? Pepperdine University students vandalize pro-life display, ripping down crosses. How nice. This would be in California. They were vandalizing the display with pro-abortion messages and removing crosses from the campus. Why are you taking down the crosses at a Christian school? A vandal is asked in a video. Because I'm not a Christian, the woman replied. Pepperdine College Republicans had installed a pro-life bulletin reading lives taken by abortion since Roe v. Wade, 62 million. I heard it was 63, but who's going to quibble over a million dead children? The display included 620 crosses, one for every 100,000 lives taken since Roe v. Wade. Hours later, video, they vandalized the place. Ah, the graffiti that they wrote. Here's some that is at least not inappropriate. But they're close. Vasectomies prevent abortion. No uterus, no opinion. God does not support the legislation of women's bodies. Apparently, they don't know about the Ten Commandments. Do you feel the world is broken? Pennsylvania University threatens disciplinary action against students who misuse pronouns. It's a small university, but nevertheless, hold on. It's not just out there. It can be in here, particularly if you're a Southern Baptist. Southern Baptist Convention Committee President resigns amid controversy over sex abuse inquiry. Here's the deal with the Southern Baptist Convention right now. It's not good. A waiver of attorney-client privilege allows the investigator to review privileged legal memos and communications between the SBC committee officials and its now former legal counsel. Why? Because their legal counsel of 50, 60 years quit because of this. That the people who are promoting the investigation, they want total clarity, don't we all? Other people, including Ronnie Floyd, are saying, no, that's going to affect us a lot, and it could affect our insurance and coverage from damages. So you've got two sides of it. The point of it, not picking a side in the matter, it's just, it's breaking. It's acrimonious. And we don't want to see the Southern Baptist Convention split. Do we? Maybe it's in your local church. Maybe it's in your home. Maybe it's in your neighborhood. Do you feel the world is broken? We do. The question now is, how are we going to think to not fall into a funk? How can I now go about the business of living in a broken world without getting angry? Without thinking there is no hope in the morning, without being weighed down by the carking cares of our culture, the future of our children. Do you feel the world is broken? We do. The question now is, so what are we going to do about it? How are we going to think on it?
Do you feel the world is broken?
We do.
Do you feel the shadows deepen?
We do.
But do you know that all the dark won't stop the light?
light from getting through. Do you wish that you could see it all in you?
Is broken. We know the one who has the power to open the scroll. Rest in that. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.